fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm brimming with excitement.
Yeah, I can see it bubbling to the surface.
It's bubbling. In fact, I think I'm so excited that the intro music felt slow.
I did slow it down 0.5.
I was like, why is this intro music so slow? Andrew, I'm good. It's Sunday, so we're recording, what, 2 or 3 days earlier than we normally record.
Sometimes we record on Sundays. We used to record on Sundays all the time.
But that was our day.
And then we started getting lazy and slow.
Well, we moved across the street from one another.
That helped, yeah.
We moved across the street. And you joined the police force. So
also had... No, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Those two things contributed to our recording night sort of shifting to Tuesdays or Wednesdays. But yeah, we're recording on Sunday because Monday... Tomorrow, I depart for Utah, just a few hours away by plane.
Not by drive. I mean, in fairness, it's like an 8-hour drive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's maybe a little bit more than that, but
maybe a 10-hour drive.
I leave for Salt Lake in the morning, from where I will be driving by shuttle. I'll be taking a shuttle to Alta Ski Resort, where I will spend the next several days. Skiing, inshallah. So I'm pumped. I'm excited. It's been...
it's a 12 and a half hour drive.
Yeah, I was thinking a little bit longer than 8, but still doable. But yeah, it's a relatively short flight.
Yeah, that's, you know, like an hour and a half.
So short that you get the small plane.
Yeah, 3 seats.
Yeah, well, I think it's a 4-seater. That I'm taking, but the first class is just 3.
So fancy. So fancy.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm actually going to meet up with John Lilly there.
Ooh.
At some point, probably, and chat with him. Maybe have a beer, an IRL beer.
How about that?
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. I'm
virtual pumped. Beers are fun, but they're just not the same.
It is not the same. Yeah, there. Depending on who you're having the beer with, there are some advantages. But
yeah, definitely.
Andrew, how are you?
I am good. I'm stuffed. I made a huge dinner today. Was like, I'm gonna do a big dinner today. I made tri-tip. I made blackened rockfish. Duck fat potatoes. I did surf and turf. Mac and cheese. Surf and turf mac and cheese with shrimpy and pancetta. Some roasted carrots and parsnips and garlic bread. So I am.
Garlic bread.
I'm stuffed. I'm like a little bit meat sweaty because the kids didn't eat much. Well, they ate much, but I also, there was a lot on their plate. So I did some plate cleaning and I had like, I don't know. 2 or 3 adult humans worth of tri-tip for dinner.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Sous vide tri-tip is just perfect.
Yeah, that's a really good way to cook. It's hard to cook, like, unless you really know what you're doing, it's hard to cook tri-tip to the right temperature. So sous vide.
130 degrees, 6 hours, hot sear it.
Takes all the mystery out.
Oh, all the mystery out.
And it's almost impossible. It's almost impossible to overcook it at that point because... You can't, with the sear, you can't get into the meat. Like
it takes a long time to start getting into the meat.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Turned out really good. Just Montreal steak seasoning.
You say you go to 130?
Yep. 130 for 6 hours. I hold it there.
It comes out like high, medium, rare.
I mean, you saw it. I think squarely medium rare.
Yeah. Yeah. I tri-tip is one of those where. I probably lean towards the medium on tri-tip, but
yeah, I agree. But I try to, I always tend a little bit lower because inevitably that rest brings it up.
Yeah.
So I rest it after it comes out of the sous vide and then I hot sear it to keep from getting it too hot.
If you do a sous vide, does the temperature come up on the rest?
I don't know. I've never done any kind of experimentation with it. Like, I've never put a probe in the bag. So I don't know. Yeah. But I let it rest to just cool a little bit and everything soak everything back up and firm up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then throw it in the pan.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, good. In any event, we're not talking about skiing and we're not talking about the appropriate methods to cook appropriate cuts of steak. Rather, we're talking about watches tonight, Andrew. We're talking about watches.
What?
And unlike most nights, we're talking about our watches tonight.
We are. And they're you slurpers.
I like that. You proposed this topic, and I was like, yeah, interesting. There's a show there. And it was fun. It was fun to prepare for the show. So I think, well, why don't you tell us what we're talking about?
Sure. So my initial idea was, what do we have? Because we've done some state of the collections, and honestly, there's not been a whole lot of changes there since our state of the collections. So everyone's got a pretty good idea of the types of watches that we own personally. But I was thinking about the watches that we wear the most, and that. So I'm looking at what you brought, and you know what I have out. That made perfect sense for me. Exactly what it had, or what you brought, but you posed the idea. What would replace them? And we kind of went back and forth on what replace would look like. You know, my initial thought was, okay, one for one, what would replace this? Like, that doesn't make sense because this is what I want. Like, I don't have a replacement for any of these watches because this is the watch that I want. But there are watches that would jump it, that would knock it off the podium.
I said that the problem with that is that we each have at least one endgame watch, right?
Yeah.
That we'll talk about, and you probably already know what they are, but we each have at least one watch that's like, well, this is it. This is the watch
this slot. You don't ever improve upon that position.
Right. And you might be able to, like, you know, maybe a different metal or a different evolution, but this is the watch I want for this slot. So, yeah, we had to shift a little bit.
But at least, so the perspective I took on this was what watches could get added to the watch box that would slip these maybe out of their podium positions. What route did you take?
Yeah, I think it was basically the same. I don't know. You know, one of the things I said, maybe it doesn't make sense for us to have too strict a rule here. But yeah, so sort of the same thing. Like, knowing what I know about these watches and how I wear these watches and what they do, what watch could I reasonably aspire to do something similar? And it wasn't exactly one-to-one for me. You'll see as we go through these things how some of the watches that I picked, like the upgrade watch, it, you know, covers, you know, maybe two elements of two of these or maybe not elements of any of them exactly. So it wasn't precisely one-to-one, but for each of these, I kind of had, oh, okay, here's what this does in my collection and here's what I might upgrade this with reasonably. I mean, that was kind of our goal here. Not to have, this isn't a pie in the sky.
Right. We're not getting ALS. Like, this is a watch that we could feasibly buy today without being served papers.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but yes, at some point in the next like 3 to 5 years.
Maybe not today. Yeah. I'm like, but it could be on the, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
It could happen without, you know, also then having to bear the burden of child support.
Yeah. That's right. Well, but if you did do that, you'd at least have the watch to sell for child support.
Yeah.
Got hairy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, also there's a likelihood that she wouldn't know how much it cost, so it wouldn't get counted against my like net value.
That's right.
So that would be helpful.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. With that said, I think it makes sense for us to go into this. You know, this is one of those episodes that and you can tell me if you think I'm wrong. In my head, I was like, this is going to go pretty quick. But
we've had 150 episodes that we thought were going to go pretty quick. And then, you know, we're at like an hour 20, hour 30.
So. I think that's pretty close to accurate. Yeah. So we might as well just get right into it. Why don't you start with your first watch, Andrew? And
ooh, are we going to go one to one?
I think that's what we'll do. Ooh. So does that work for your upgrade picks? Can you generally coordinate an upgrade pick with a watch?
I can't.
Well, do it anyway. So why don't we start with your first watch? Okay. I think that white dialed one is the one that we should start with.
I think I accept your position. I can coordinate this. Yeah, I can make this happen. I can do this. Okay, so my... And actually, I don't think this is the watch that gets the most wrist time. I think this is my number two wrist time watch. And big shock here, it's the Cartier Santos. I love this watch. This is the most comfortable, best-fitting watch I've ever put on. Like, it was a watch that I put on somebody else's and realized, well, shit, now I have to buy one. And it's iconic. It's filled with like legacy. We all know this watch.
Are we going to call this a white dial?
It's a white dial.
I was thinking this is like a silver dial.
Oh, that's the white one. I'm sure there's silver out there.
Because when I said the white dial watch, I meant a different one, but this is a good choice too. Yeah. Andrew, this is just like a perfect watch.
It's,
although your wrist is just small enough.
Just a link smaller than yours.
Yeah, half link. Yeah, this thing's maybe not perfect.
It's so, when I got it, I got it on the bracelet with also the leather strap. The leather is still in plastic. I've never pulled it out.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I have no interest in taking that bracelet off ever. Even though it's as easy as a bracelet can ever be removed, that quick release technology is so great. The quick release on the link exchanges is clean. It's easy. That butterfly clasp is crisp and beautiful. I could spend a whole episode just talking about this watch.
I think the thing I like the most about this watch is perhaps what makes this watch what it is that, you know, from 8 feet, maybe 10 feet away, you could almost mistake this watch for something more delicate than it is. You know, Cartier with the Roman numerals and with the mix of polished and brushed surfaces and the railroad track minute markers, the blue hands, right? The heat blue hands.
Those blue hands play with light unlike anything I've ever seen.
You know, you really have to sort of touch this watch to realize, oh no, this is a sports watch.
This is a banger. Like, this is a tool watch. It's just so, the polish is just so elegant. And I try to kind of treat it like a safe baby for a little bit. And then I got a good little scuff there at like the 7 o'clock on the bezel, and I'm like, all right, let's just wear this watch now. I got the Band-Aid off. Yeah, I love it. I still kind of struggle with feeling a bit like an asshole when I wear it.
Because of that dressiness.
Yeah, this is the dressiness, and people are like, oh, what is that? And I'm like, it's a watch.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, who makes it? It looks really nice. I'm like, Cartier. Like, what? Yeah, that's gotta be expensive. It was. How much? I'm not gonna say.
You can't sneak that one by. I think all of the rest of the watches on the table, maybe save for one, are pretty passable.
But I think what makes that seem more expensive is when people hear Rolex or Omega, they're like, oh, that's nice. But I don't think they assign a dollar value to it. But when people hear Cartier, they're like,
Fuck.
Right. Cartier is from magazines and from nothing else. Like, they've seen advertisements and have no actual...
Yeah. It has a different impact on the kind of uninitiated assessment, like perception of it. So for me, now that we've talked about what I think is probably my number two most worn watch.
So before you move on, hold on, Andrew, before you move on, let me stop you because I'd like to get an idea. So you've got three watches. We've only talked about one, but were there any themes from the three watches that you picked that you were able to say, okay, here's what I know. Here's what I know about my three most worn watches, or here's what my three most worn watches inform me about my watch wearing.
Yes. I like super comfortable, petite sport watches. That's what I want. I want something that's really legible. I want something that's just going to, the bracelet is just going to drape around your wrist. I want a little bit of polish. I don't want, as much as I love titanium, when I'm in this space, I want something that's going to grab light. I want something that's just going to look good, but still on the inside have all of that sport tool functionality.
I accept.
Okay. Was that kind of generally what you're looking for?
I think so. Yeah. So why don't you give us your first upgrade watch?
My first upgrade watch. I feel dumb for picking it because of the name. Like Sua Before Dawn. The Grand Seiko. Stupid Wi-Fi. The Grand Seiko SLGA021, part of the Evolution 9 collection. And this. What?
It's a fantastic watch. I love this watch.
This is exactly it, right? This is a spring drive, so it's housing this freaking amazing technology. And that's so part of what I love about watches, is that we have these tiny little engineering and technological masterpieces at 40, even a big watch, 45 millimeters wide.
Is this 45? I thought this guy was 40.
No, I'm talking about the technology.
Right.
At maybe bigger, but generally at most 45 millimeters wide. A real big one is 8 millimeters tall. Like, we're talking about these tiny, magnificent machines. And then in comes spring drive, which is somehow even more impressive in a lot of regards. And this is just Grand Seiko, right? This is that perfect polish and finish, these great clean edges, just a beautifully textured Lake Suwa Before Dawn with the breeze running across the surface of the water, but you can't see it because it's Before Dawn, so I don't know how they were able to capture it. But this is it for me. Just an absolute, as simple as it gets, beautiful dial, sport watch. The size on it, 40 millimeters. It's got 22 millimeter lugs. Grand Seiko does some weird stuff.
That's my only objection to this SLGA line. I mean, I really like the Evolution 9 stuff, but the 22 millimeter lugs I could do without.
I dig the proportions on it because of the way they do their in-link and lug shape.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that fat, like, weird proportion that's really common in odd size lugs. The proportions are there. It's got this beautiful, just nice squared off crown. And this is it. 11.8 thick. This is the upgrade. This is filling that dressy sport, can wear it doing anything watch.
I think this is a terrific watch. And I think I was chuckling. I'll come back to why I was chuckling. You know, there's a lot of Grand Seiko choices. Is there something, anything about the Evolution 9 line that speaks to you? This is also 120 hour movement on this guy.
Yeah, plus or minus 10 a month.
Yeah, these. It's, I mean, it's a terrific. This is the 9R terrific.
There's a lot of. I think there's probably a lot of Grand Seikos that could have fit this. But what I was looking for in this, when I'm looking at an analog-ish or upgrade-ish to the Santos, I'm going straight three hand. I am gonna go with a date. I don't know why. I don't have a good answer for you. It doesn't have a power reserve indicator, which I just absolutely loathe. I get why they're there, but I find a better way to do it.
Yeah, just not your thing.
Yeah, I don't want a fan at the 7 o'clock or the 8 o'clock. I could just do away with it. I can wind my own fucking watch. Oh, it's not running. I'll fix that real quick.
I can tell it's not running because it's not running.
Oh, it's about to be not running. Right. Like, I can rectify this pretty easily without a power reserve indicator. I don't have a good, Grand Seiko is all over the board, right? You know, I kind of sat on the, oh, which GMT is it? It's the no bezel GMT. I kind of sat with that for a little bit thinking about it. I was like, it's just not quite, it. This was it.
I think Evolution 9 is the way to go. Yeah. It's a terrific watch. Well, I'm going to go to my first watch from my collection that I wear a lot. And the reason I'm going to go with this watch is because it's a GMT. And since we're talking about GMTs, I have two GMTs that I'm going to talk about in succession. One of these is a special watch for me and for you. This is the Notice Sector Watch Clicker collaboration. This is a dive bezel GMT watch utilizing the Seiko automatic GMT. I bought this watch, I wouldn't say out of a sense of obligation, but more out of like, yeah, you buy your collaboration watch. And maybe not totally sure how much I would wear it. This level of finishing and this sort of caliber of watch, I wouldn't say is below me. Certainly it's not. But I do think my tastes have evolved just slightly past this $500, $600 watch. But golly.
I don't know if they've evolved so much as that itch has been scratched.
Yeah, maybe that's right, Andrew.
You've cultivated the understanding and your emotional threshold for dollar signs is greatly increased.
That is true. Mm-hmm. That is true. With that said, here's what I'm going to say about this watch. I am going to say, golly, I wear this thing all the time. I just love it. I love it. I love the steel bezel. I got the steel bezel because...
I think we all got the steel too, didn't we?
I think so. Yeah. Yep. That felt like the right move. Also, I had a black bezel and it just felt like this is a steel bezeled watch. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of blown away by how much I'm wearing this. It's just the watch I want to put on at least once or twice a week, which given the amount of watches I have to choose from...
And days in the week.
That's right. That means... This watch is taking significantly more wrist time than most of the watches that I wear. I think that there's something about the way they've done this watch, specifically the Sector case, that maybe defies what I think I like about watches. I haven't quite put my finger on what, why, but just day in, day out, I'm like, yeah, I want to wear this watch. And it's not because it has our logo on it or because, we picked these elements or anything, although that does.
It helps.
That does help. It is just really a lovely watch to wear. The dial color is really, really good. All that inky, inky blue... Mm-hmm. That plays really dark.
The bracelet's really comfortable. The case is really comfortable. It's a crazy comfortable watch top to bottom.
That's right. And I like the GMT more than I thought I would. I think it's kind of popular right now for people to say, oh, GMTs do nothing for me. I hear that a lot, or perhaps I read that a lot. It seems like that's a popular thing to say right now.
Do you have any other GMTs?
No, this is my GMT. Yeah. Yes, this is my GMT. So let me back away from the three watches that I've got on the table today, 3 and 4.
And just say
all of these watches have things in common. One of them is that they all have a bracelet. Mm-hmm. A good bracelet. One of them is that they're all dark dialed. Mm. So either dark blue or black. They've all got like a really nice geometry to the dial. Drastically different dials on these three watches. But they all have this sort of like elegant, you said the same thing. They've all got this like elegant, polished sportiness. Mm-hmm. They're all 4-tool watches. The bracelets are toolish.
It's a linen suit.
It's a linen suit. Yeah, I think maybe that's right. Or yeah. Or like a pair of monk straps.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
All of these fit that mold, and so I knew. Like, as I'm picking watches to sort of kick these out of the rotation, it means it's going to be something I'm going to wear as much. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, I did sort of try to find something that I thought would compete directly, one-to-one. And in this case, this is the most on the nose of each of these.
Yeah.
And this watch is the Grand Seiko Evolution 9 Sport Spring Drive GMT, specifically the SBGE 283. This is the black dialed Spring Drive Evolution 9. So what can I say about this watch? This is a Evolution 9. Let's talk a little bit about Evolution 9, introduced a few years back. It's Grand Seiko's sort of like push towards modernization, right? Mm-hmm. These are by and large thinner. They're using thinner movements to get a thinner case, but they're also, they've relaxed on their design language. So they still have the same goals, but their design language is relaxed in a way that's allowed them to slim down their cases, modernize their approach. And these watches, these Evolution 9 watches, are really something the same, different, truly an evolution of Grand Seiko's mm-hmm. design. This is, it's a Spring Drive GMT, 200 meters. It's got a fixed bezel, this terrific black dial. They've also got like a gray snowflake dial. I think that's what they call it. 41 millimeters.
It's the weathered birch bark found in the high mountain pass after dawn.
There you go.
I don't know.
41 millimeters. These are still chunky, but it's a GMT. So you've got like 13.
It's forgivable with a chronograph, with a GMT. You can get up into that space and like, it makes sense.
So these are a permanent collection watch, 13.9. So this is chunky, but it's a dive GMT, 200 meter dive GMT. You've got the 9R66, automatic movement, 72 hour power reserve. Plus or minus 1 second per day or 15 per month. It's their high intensity titanium, so they wear pretty light. So what I wanted here was a big, chunky dive style GMT, and mission accomplished.
Got it.
I think the reason we both went with Grand Seiko, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but so I'll just speak for myself. I think the reason I went with Grand Seiko is because I think Grand Seiko does everything that I want in terms of a sport watch. The lines are unapologetically sporty, mm-hmm. but they really just, with the polish, the Zeratsu polishing and the crisp lines, and you're going to catch light every time you roll your wrist over. This is really sort of the pinnacle of finishing in that space, right? That sub $10,000 space. And then you turn this thing over and you look at the movement and it's like, yowza. Yowza.
Yeah.
This is, like you said, these machines are something to behold. And Grand Seiko, probably more than any other company, is doing that thing, right? Like, look at what we did. Just look at it.
Yeah. Well, I think my thinking for Grand Seiko is very much along the lines of your thinking. And Grand Seiko does a thing that only Grand Seiko does. Nobody else does finishing the way that they do it. That's an in-game watch. That's what it takes to like remove things from the podium, is like in-game shit.
We didn't compare choices either, by the way. Mm-mm. We just both showed up with Evo 9.
Yeah.
Spring drives.
I mean, it's a spring drive.
What's next?
Ooh. Okay. Next up for me. Probably my most worn watch is the Christopher Ward C63 Sealander. It's phenomenal. It's that Christopher Ward light catcher case, and it's the 40 millimeter version. It's not the C36. I got this when we got the first press material on it, I was like, well,
I'm buying that.
Buying one of those because it is everything that I want in a watch. It's a simple, beautiful dial. That Christopher Ward case is unmatched. They just do something so special with that light catcher case. The dimensions on it are perfect. I have been wearing it on an Everest straight bar for some time because I haven't tried the new Christopher Ward bracelets. As comfortable as that bracelet is, as the Christopher Ward bracelet is that came with this, it's just a little bit too chunky.
Yeah, with the lack of taper on that bracelet, that's...
And forgive us, Evan, it does have 0.23 millimeters of taper. You're right. It's not the amount of taper that I want, but it's a tool watch, right? It's just a thick chunk of a bracelet. And it's, even as big as it is, super comfortable. And it balances the watch nicely. Like, it's not a valid complaint that I have. It's just truly a taste preference that I just don't like the lack of taper. I love this watch. That's why it's probably my most worn watch. Great tool watch. It's attractive in every environment. On that black Everest is just phenomenal.
Have either of us ever drawn the connection between Christopher Ward finishing and Grand Seiko?
No, but I think we've drawn the Christopher Ward is punching out of its weight class finishing conversation quite a bit.
You know, it's never occurred to me until this moment, I don't think. But Christopher Ward, looking at the sides of this case, Christopher Ward is doing some Grand Seiko stuff. I don't know that that's never occurred to me until just this moment, but dial and everything, hands not similar, but this could be a Grand Seiko case. Interesting.
I also love the short lugs on this thing. This is kind of a cannonball of a case. Like, short lugs keeps it really tight against you.
And they go down real sharp, but then they come back up at the end, so it doesn't have...
Yeah, they're like cut off.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a couple of watches that we've talked about recently that had a similar lug design. And I was like, oh, I recognize that. Anyhow.
And you get that into the slot on your wrist and it just melts into your body.
Yeah. Yeah, it becomes a part of you.
So what are you upgrading this guy with?
I feel like there was a couple really obvious answers to upgrade a 40 millimeter sport watch.
Sure.
Right. some of which have been talked about on this very show. And I think any one of them would really would knock this off the podium. But for that, like, because this is like a sentimental watch at this point. Like, this is a watch I would never part with because I just love it. So I gotta really, it's gotta be more than just dollars to dethrone this watch. So for me, it had to be not just awesome, but like, shit, awesome. It's a Rolex Explorer, 40 millimeter, DLC black. This is breathtaking. This is like, we don't need to say a whole lot about it beyond the fact that this should be a stock option, that the Explorer has never been offered in DLC, PVD, or Cerakote. Can you imagine a Cerakoted black Explorer? I can only imagine a PVD because I'm looking at one right now, and that's what it would take. That would be my pick.
So this is an aftermarket PVD or DLC?
Yes.
Interesting.
Luxury of Watches does it. This is so baller.
So this is just something you can buy from them.
Mm-hmm. A murdered out Explorer.
Cool.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's neat. That's neat. I've never seen one of these.
And you would have only ever seen one in person ever. They're you know, 14 grand, which to be fair, isn't much more than secondary pricing on Explorers anyway. So it's kind of like, maybe it's worth it. Frank and I were talking a couple weeks ago about a Cerakote watch. And I told him to send his Explorer to like a gun company that does Cerakoting, because they do all kinds of super fine Cerakoting processes. But I think he's reasonably apprehensive of that, because Cerakote is such a great freaking coating.
Like, yeah, it's kind of fragile though.
Yeah, and you know, you're sending your Explorer to people who've never opened up or worked on a watch. There's a lot of risk involved. But getting a PVD coated from a company called The Luxury of Watches.
Well, and PVD is not...
it's wholly different.
DLC is not the same as Cerakote, yeah. Right? DLC no. Really doesn't ship like that. So yeah, this is terrific. And so, I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? This is, I mean, really, this is the watch that the C65 is probably most fairly compared straight across mm-hmm. against.
Yeah.
Yeah. It so makes a ton of sense.
That's the Usurper, a DLC'd Explorer, because that's so baller.
I like it. I like this watch a lot.
Okay. That one could lead to papers if I were to just get that today.
That's a little bit, yeah, that's a little bit on the pricey end. I mean, that's a big decision. That's a big purchase.
That's the one, though. I'm not going to get a...
You're not, not going to get stock. Silver
no,
steel.
No, in PVD.
It's a cool watch. I dig it.
Made me think, how cool would a black sub be?
Like just a murdered out...
Yeah. Because this is, I mean, it makes black on black as black. Legible as the black dial Explorer already is... on a black case, it's just all dial.
Yeah. Yeah, the rest of the watch kind of disappears.
Yeah.
Cool.
Black on black sub. Whew, that'd be baller.
Okay, my second most worn watch is the Formex Essence 39. I've talked about this watch so much, I don't feel like there's a lot more to say about it. It's a 100-meter watch. It's thin as all get out. It's got this beautiful dial. It's got polished. It's got brushed.
The cool shock-absorbing little plunger effect thing.
That's right. It's sporty, but also elegant. It's got this wonderful, super comfortable bracelet. I mean, the whole thing is just... And it just feels luxurious. I don't think that there's another watch in my collection that feels as luxurious as this one.
You got a really close second in the Triumph, though.
So I also brought the Monta Triumph because I'm going to put these two. I wanted to give an honorable mention to the Triumph because most of the time for these two watches, I wear them on the same day. It's like today's a Essence Triumph day. there's rarely a time where I'm going to wear one and wouldn't consider the other.
Do you double wrist them?
No, I can't wear a watch on my right wrist. It's super uncomfortable, but
it's where watches go.
I could consider that. Yeah. You don't have it open all the way.
I know. It's like, what's happening?
Yeah. It's got that. It's got a bit of a different mechanism on the clasp than just about any other watch. You know, really what this is the same as your C63, right? Mm-hmm. This is a steel sports watch.
It's a little more techy, like technical, like I mean, with the screws and the bezel, with the kind of stepped bezel to case interface, a little bit more tooly.
It's more Thule, yeah, than the Triumph. Like mm-hmm. I said, I almost want to talk about these two in conjunction with each other because they do fill the same spot in my collection. And you wouldn't think that they would because these watches are not all that similar, but they do the same things for me.
Yeah.
And so, which is why I have the Triumph here on the table as well. But really, that's what this watch is. This is my 40 millimeter, not small, not big watch, right? You used to talk quite a bit about this is the watch. This is my watch. Mm-hmm. These both do that for me. This is my watch. I can wear these anywhere. I can wear them with a t-shirt. I can wear them golfing. I've worn them both skiing. In the last year, I have worn them with a suit. I've worn them in court. These are, I do anything in these watches. I don't garden in my watches or do landscaping because that's really hard on watches, I find. But mm-hmm. just about anything else that I do, I'm wearing one of these watches.
This bracelet.
So what to replace these? Well, those are the parameters, right? Mm-hmm. This is a watch that I'll do anything in. It's got to look good in a t-shirt. It's got to look good under the sleeve of an Arc'teryx jacket. And it's got to be able to go into court with me. And for me, some people won't be surprised. For me, the watch that I upgrade this with is an Alpine Eagle, mm-hmm. a 41 millimeter Alpine Eagle. And actually, interestingly, that watch is kind of it kind of lies almost directly in between these two, right?
Yeah.
Probably closer to the Formex than the Monta. Especially because I'd probably get a blue dialed Alpine Eagle. You know, it's got a bit of the Santos in it with the Roman numeral mm-hmm. and just a little
and
bit
the high
more
polish.
Dressy.
Yeah.
The bracelet on the Chopard's closer to the Formex. But it just is going to do that all day, every day, mid-sized, do anything in a watch. I would do anything in this watch.
The black dial two-tone is good.
Yeah. Gosh, it's a fantastic. That rose gold on mm-hmm. that thing is fantastic. This is a watch that's made to do all your things. You can ski in it. You can go fishing if you want to. You can wear it in the court, right?
Yeah.
This is a watch that's supposed to be able to do anything. It just so happens to have this absolutely insane Calibre 101C movement and beautiful, beautiful Chopard styling. This thing only came out a few years back, I think 2019, but it is probably for me, short of watches that are really unobtainium, this is like the coolest everyday watch on earth right mm-hmm. now.
Well, and it at what, 13,000?
Yeah, well, you can get these for under 10 in really good condition on the second-hand market.
That's like, that kind of works in the all-day, er-day watch
Yeah.
And you know, it's expensive.
Sure. But it's,
but it's also...
It's not 90 grand.
No, it's not a mortgage. The polish on that middle link is just great.
And you know, these come in at under 10 millimeters. I think they're like 9.5. Cost chronometer certified. Fantastic in-house caliber. Yeah, dude. Give it up. Let me have it.
I wish a Grand Seiko told the story about the texture on the dial, though.
Oh. I mean, yeah.
You know their story would be good.
Well, but it's Chopard. And they're like, it looks good.
Yeah. That. Do you need anything else?
Yeah, that's right. Integrated links, obviously, so you're not having to worry about swapping straps or whatever.
This is the kind of bracelet that even if there were strap options, though, you're not gonna be replacing it.
Yeah, that's right. I don't replace the bracelets on any of these, right? I just wear, that's the thing. I wear all of these on a bracelet all the time. In fact, sometimes I'll put them on a strap just because I'm like, I want to wear a strap. And then it's like fewer than 2 or 3 hours where I'm like, I want the bracelet. I'm just a bracelet guy.
Every once in a while I see a watch on a nylon strap and I'm like, man, I think I want to get the Pelagos fixed bars to like force me to wear a nylon strap. Because I love them. They're so comfortable. But the bracelets are just, at least in the watches that I'm wearing primarily, the bracelets are so good. And nylon doesn't hold a candle to this Everest rubber. Like I've said it before and I'll say it again. I never got it until I did.
Yeah.
Until I put an Everest on, I was like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Now it all makes sense. Cause this is such a good strap.
It is. You know, oh, it's a great strap. Yeah. I've got the fitted nylon for my Triumph and it's really nice, but I still wear it on the bracelet. So yeah. So for me, Alpine Eagle, I think that that's maybe an end game watch for that category, that every day, all day, do anything.
I think it's a good fit for that category too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I think so. Well, Andrew, what's your final watch here?
My final top three is the Manta Atlas. And this is my first like big boy watch.
Can I just say, nobody's paying us, right? Christopher Ward hasn't paid us. Monta's not paying us. Formex isn't paying us. We just really love these watches.
Yeah, right? These are watches that we bought with our monies and wear the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Although I will say your next watch, you sort of bought with your money, but it was kind of somebody else's.
Yeah, it's true. This is almost like an endorsement watch.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Manta Atlas is my probably third most worn watch. And it's for all the reasons you'd expect. The case finishing, the case shape and size, the dimensions of this watch are just absolutely perfect. It is
the thinness of that watch.
Yes. Yeah. Everything about this is perfect. The bracelet's phenomenal. I don't wear it on an Everest, though I do have a fitted Everest for it. I don't, because the bracelet's just too good.
Do you have the blue fitted for that?
Yeah. It might be that it's too blue.
I think it is, yeah. The blue's not quite not a one-to-one match on that.
It's just also a bit of a bright strap for me. I have worn it on it quite a bit, but the bracelet's just, it's super good. And the bracelet's super tight tolerance. It's a big pain in the dick to replace.
And no quick release. Manta does not do quick release.
Which, as we know from Frank, quick release is butts. Use not in the good way.
I love it.
But it's stinky butts. I much prefer quick release because I don't do things in salt water. If I'm in salt water, something terrible has happened. And I'm not really worried about the functionality of my end links. Like, at that point, it's survival. And I think, and side by side with the Triumph, this is they're cousins, maybe siblings even.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same sized case. You know, the Atlas is notably thicker, but on the wrist, you don't really feel it.
Mm-mm. No, it wears super thin. I love this watch. It's money. So to boot this out of bed, it's the Omega Seamaster 300. And my thinking on this was, like, this is the most tool watch of this group. It's a GMT, which doesn't, you know, I think maybe there's an argument to be made that the C63 is more of a tool watch, just because it's a little, I think it's just a little less refined in its appearance, which isn't to say it's not refined. It's just, it has a more tool watch appearance than the Atlas. The GMT in the Atlas is really, really discreet.
Yeah, it is.
And even that is really elegantly done. The curve in that GMT hand to... What is happening over here?
You've gotten sprayed both times.
You've squirted on me both times. the curve in this GMT hand to clear the markers is brilliant. It adds like a really cool visual
it's a neat to that detail. Hand.
It's, yeah. And it's, you don't notice it until you do. And then when you do, it's just great.
The markers and the handsets on Monta's markers and handsets are something to behold.
Yeah. So I wanted a tool watch, right? That's what it's going to take to dethrone a tool watch. And this is it. This is the tool watch of all tool watches. It's a Prospect Diver with not a discrete helium release valve. It's like a whole other crown helium release valve. It's the Bond watch. It's cool. It's sporty. But because it's been a Bond watch, you know it's elegant, right? Even if it wasn't before that, people having seen this on James Bond wrist in a tuxedo, they're like, oh, I can do that. Which I think is when bracelets became dressy, when people started seeing James Bond wearing bracelets on watches. They're like, oh, he wears it in a tuxedo. That's dressy fashion. It's not, but it is, and it works.
And it's got that nine piece five link that I think is just terrific with the sort of polished dual track.
Yes. The only thing
I could consider getting one of these for my Speedmaster, by the way.
They have, there's some versions out there without the wave dial. I think the wave dial is the right way to go.
Yep.
Even though
100%,
even though I actually prefer the no wave dial, I think in person I would regret having a Seamaster without the wave dial. Yeah. And this is a watch that's like it. This is on my near future list. I've kind of been like bouncing back and forth between the Pelagos and this. And I think this is maybe it. Black Bay was kind of in the conversation. You know, Doxa's the 300T is in the conversation, but I think I'm going to like this more than I would like any of the others.
You know, the cynic in me suspects that the Pelagos was introduced to compete directly with the Seamaster 300.
I don't think that's cynical at all. I think that's probably a pretty objective assessment.
Yeah,
maybe. But the Pelagos
feels a little cynical, but I do think that these are really similar watches.
They are, and I really like the titanium of the Pelagos. I like the left hand version. I don't like that it's. I have not seen one and not gilt. So there's just a lot of things, and what I can say with confidence is that I always like the Seamaster. There's nothing about it that I don't like. Sometimes I'm concerned by the 42, but I know that the way this watch wears, it's not going to feel like it. But also when you're wearing a Prospect Diver, you want that 42. You want a little bit of ass. Like,
it's a big watch and it should be a big watch. Yeah. Yeah.
And I want that stupid helium release valve.
It's cool. The shape of it's neat.
It doesn't need to be there. It just objectively does not need to be. Not just the helium release valve, but the cone, the crown for it. And like, this is just kind of a little bit of an odd watch, and I just love it. And that's what it takes. That's what gets you onto the podium, is something that's just a little bit perfect in every way. And everything you see about it, you're like, but also I really, really like it.
You know, a little bit imperfect.
I think not perfect.
But for the sub, this is one of the watches that you see in the wild the most frequently.
I've only seen like one.
Well, I've seen certainly more than that. But what I was going to say is, even maybe more than the sub, when you see one, you're like, oh, fucking Seamaster, right? You're like 40 feet away and you're like, oh, that guy's wearing a Seamaster.
The profile, you can see 100,000 different dive watches in a day. I'm like, is that a sub? Oh no, it's an Invicta.
Yeah, that's right.
But oh, it's a Citizen.
But the Seamaster.
It has no.
That's the Seamaster 300.
It has no copycats.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a beautiful watch. Adam Savage wears one sometimes, and I'm like, I think he's got a white dial one. It's like Seamaster.
And what up, Adam?
Yeah.
Hey, Adam, if you want to come hang out, we would love to have you.
Adam Savage wears a Seamaster. Great watch, Andrew. I think it's a great pick.
And that's what we would name the episode, too.
And I think it's, you know, you would rebuffed my, like, efforts to do one watch to one upgrade. And I can understand why, based on the watches you picked. But that makes a lot of sense to me.
That's what it takes to get on the podium.
My final watch is a watch I own. Most worn watch, certainly my most worn watch, is my Omega Speedmaster 300. It's not a 300. It's a Speedmaster 50. We don't call it that, though. It's a Speedmaster Professional, Andrew. Mm-hmm. I got this watch
in a Pelican case with a big-ass medallion.
In a giant case. I got this watch when I got hit by a car.
That's why I say it wasn't really your money, nor was it not your money. It was.
That's right.
It was a windfall. car fall.
And you know, so this watch is... I want to be doing two things when I wear this watch. One, I want to feel kind of fancy. And two, I want to wear a big fucking watch.
It's a 42 millimeter watch.
It's my big fucking watch day.
Your Hamilton Pilot is way bigger than this.
It's about the same size.
Is it?
But those are the two watches I wear on my BFW days. And you know, the Speedmaster isn't huge. It's not an enormous watch, but it takes up a little bit more wrist real estate. And it's
'cause those long lugs.
And it's just sort of, it feels big, right? Mm-hmm. What it lacks in size, it makes up for in just sort of
presence.
Like, hi, I'm a watch, and I'm on Everett's wrist.
It's got big lats is what it is.
That's right. Or it just kind of, it pushes them up. Yeah, this is my, like, I want to wear something neat and nice and fancy and there.
Another unmistakable watch. You've never looked at somebody and been like, that could be a Speedmaster.
And you know what? People call me out on this watch relatively frequently. And by relatively frequently, I mean like three times ever. But I was getting an oil change just the other day, and the 19-year-old kid who was standing at the computer at the oil change place was like, is that a Speedmaster? And I was like, yes, it is. And he was like, is it real? And I was like,
yes, it is.
Yes, it is. And he was like, man, that is awesome. That's like $10,000, right? And I was like, no, it wasn't that much. It was about half of that.
Just a minor impact at high speed. also, baller move that a kid, and he's probably older than 19, he's probably in his early 20s, but...
he was a kid, yeah.
But that he recognized... the Speedmaster. Everyone is it a sub? No, it's not a fucking sub.
Yeah, he knew what it was. He knew what it was.
Is that a Speedmaster? Oh, I saw something interesting the other day in the wild, and I can't remember what it was. Doesn't matter. We move on.
So everybody knows what this watch is. This is the Pro. This is the Hessilite crystalled steel back.
Dot over 90.
It's not a dot over 90, actually. It's the dot to the side of 90. Womp womp.
I'm not really into
speedies.
Speedy lore, so I know dot over 90, yeah. And I don't know the significance of it, besides what it is objectively, the dot over the 90 versus at like 45 degrees to the 90.
This is the last version. It's not the current model. This is the previous version, but, you know... we don't need to say anything about Speedmaster. It's a terrific watch. I love it. It's my most worn watch. So to replace this thing, I want something big. I want something sporty, but I want something nice.
Do you know what? I want to say one more thing about the Speedmaster. The concurved dial is just phenomenal. It appears as there's no space between the dial and the domed crystal.
Everything's just right there.
It's just right there. And it shouldn't be, because you have this dome crystal, you'd expect to see airspace. It gives it an appearance of being super, super compact. Though it is not.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's a big watch, right?
It's a big old balloon.
And so I said, before we started really talking about the watches, I said, for, you know, at least two of these are endgame watches, right? I think both the Santos and the Speedmaster.
Something bad just happened.
I think Andrew just put on a Speedmaster for the first time and thought, oh boy.
It doesn't feel too big.
No. Yeah. I've never had, I know some people do have an issue with it wearing too big. For me,
every time I've put it on, it's felt too big. And this is the first time it hasn't. Something bad has happened. Yeah. I'm getting fat.
You are not. The watch that is going to fill this space needs to be big. It needs to be fancy.
Motherfucker.
It needs to be showy. But also sporty and wearable. And this is a watch that's been on my radar for quite a while, since this was introduced last year. I've talked about it a number of times.
You gotta buff this scuff out.
This watch is a watch by Zinn. And those of you who have talked to me about watches personally in the recent past won't be surprised to hear. This is the Zinn T50 GBDR. This is the gold bronze bezeled non-limited Zinn T50. So titanium case, titanium gold bronze bezel.
These came out last year. This isn't the oil filled one.
These are the ones that came out last year. Yeah. Yeah. So this is an automatic. It's not the quartz oil filled.
I can see the equivalency here. It's totally there.
You're right.
This is a far more tool watch thing.
They're not the same,
but it fills the same hole.
That's right. Fancy, cool, interesting, expensive. I know that we worry a little bit about that, like the ostentatious or the vanity aspects of the hobby. But
what are these?
You can get them for like $300 to $3,500, depending.
That's not terrible.
They're a little bit hard to find. They're a little bit hard to find.
I'm pretty sure that Zinn doesn't actually make watches.
Yeah, some of these are hard to find.
You can't buy them brand new, ever. You always buy them secondhand from a guy who also bought it secondhand, and they're hard to find. I think there's about 15 of their watches in circulation.
Right. Okay, so here's a full titanium one for $38.50. The full gold bronze with the strap. Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I think these are $4,000 to $5,000, depending on.
For what you're getting out of it, though, in German submarine titanium that's been stolen from a shipyard.
We verified that fact.
The phenomenal engineering of these watches. I've touched a good handful of watches from this brand and was just blown away by them. Like, looked at the person whose watch it was while it was on my wrist, looked at me, looked at them, and I was like, I'm probably faster than them. Real consideration, because these are just phenomenal. And you know that this version is going to be every bit as good as everything else they've ever produced.
You know, it's not huge. I think they're 41 millimeters in diameter, but they're pretty chunky.
The chunky is going to make it seem way more huge. These have to be 14 thick.
I think that's pretty close. They're 13. They're definitely in the 13s. Yeah. So that's it. That's the watch.
Oh, they're only 12.3 thick on the case. That's phenomenal.
I think it's 13 overall, though, with the crystal. But I could be wrong. They have a flat crystal, don't they?
I'm looking.
Well,
it doesn't matter. This is going to wear big because of the chunkiness. It's got that super textured, like, chain ring texture on the bezel.
Yeah.
Yeah. 410 crown. That's a weird, little bit weird crown placement.
Yeah, you're 12.3 on this. You're right. So pretty thin. Yeah, this is it. 500 meters of water resistance. Come on.
Probably no quick release on the bracelet, but if you're getting into salt water and you're 450 meters, you got bigger problems than your watch.
That's the one. It's not going to unseat the Speedmaster.
No, because that's got sentimental value.
But I would wear these on the same day.
You just bring your watch roll to work and switch out at lunch.
Not together, but I mean, I would wear these in similar circumstances. Obviously, the Speedmaster probably has a little bit more versatility.
A lot more versatility. This you wear into court, and it draws nobody's attention. Bronze bezel
T50
big bitch diver is gonna draw some attention
at 12.3 though. I'm not sure, maybe a little bit, so not 1-to-1, but in any event, that's the one I replaced this with. So there you go. These are our most worn watches and the watches that we would use to unseat those. Andrew, anything else you got to say about these watches?
I wish I hadn't wanted to put on your Speedmaster tonight, because I was pretty comfortable with not wanting one.
Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Okay. Last night I had a little bit of a bout of insomnia, and I was scrolling through all 9 of my streaming platforms looking for something to watch. I was like, when I can't sleep like that, I'm like, I'm fucking angry. Because I'm tired, but I'm not sleepy. There's nothing I can do to be ready to go sleep. So I'm just like up. I get to Hulu and I see this tile for a new FX show. It says, watch the first episode now. I was like, I'll try it, whatever. It's called Shogun. Oh my gosh, this show is so good. So it's set in the Edo period of Japanese history. And it does such a great job with you being totally ignorant of geopolitics in feudal Japan. Because barring people who have like done study to learn about that, there's not really a good reason for you to know about it. So the whole premise of the show is that the emperor has died. His heir is too young to rule, and he appoints a council of regents to run the country until his heir becomes of age.
Is this a remake of a show from the 70s?
It very well could be. I don't know. I didn't do any looking into it. I just started it, and I watched 2 or 3 episodes. I don't know how many were available. It was 2 or 3. The acting is terrific. As we've talked about before, FX does some of the best cable television programming of our era. They have like HBO quality production. You don't get the boobies, so it's kind of, you know, trade-offs, right? So it is half in English and half subtitled Japanese. On Hulu, the dubbing is poor. It's like they didn't cut the Japanese audio, so you can hear the Japanese audio and then you have an English voice over the top. It's really distracting. Just don't second screen while you're watching it. The English portion is actually supposed to be being conducted in Portuguese because it's following this English ship that's seeking out Japan to try to break the Portuguese control of trade with Japan. And it's so good. It's got great action scene. The character arcs, you can kind of see these characters taking form as you're being introduced to them. You know, the like people who are kind of initially villains, like you see why they are perceived as a villain. There's great kind of flashback into the whys, and it is really well done. Great sword violence. Like, you know, we're dealing with, I don't know what years this is, like 1600. No, it's got to be earlier than that. We're dealing with medieval weaponry kind of stuff. We've got cannons and stuff, but
pre hand armaments.
Yeah, but we've got cannons and it's a good show. The acting is great on it so far. I super, super liked it and would recommend it. And it's early phases of the show, right? So it's still a little bit trying to sort itself out and find itself. And from the position that they're doing it, this is going to be a good multi-season show, I think.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's good.
I've got another thing.
Do me.
There's this movie that came out last week. It's called Dune 2.
Mm.
Have you heard of it?
I've heard about a watch related to it.
I took my daughter, Betty, to see this on... We went on Saturday, so the day after opening.
You sent me the wrong link. I'm sorry.
I did not. I sent you a link. That's coming up. Okay. Andrew, it's terrific. It is terrific. So it's a very long movie. So between Dune 1 and Dune 2, I think we've got nearly 6 hours at this point, which some folks might call a trilogy.
or whatever a forlogy is.
I would say, look, make sure you're rested because it's a lot. But holy shit, it is good. It is good. You know, there are a lot of people who are anti-David Lynch, Dune. I'm not one of them. David Lynch, Dune is really fun. But it's not the book. It's just different in really a lot of ways. Denis Villeneuve.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We've got a movie now that covers the first book and does it justice. There are some differences. I would say the differences are minor, but there are some differences. But they're just very little. And the story itself and the way they've handled this material is absolutely spot on. The acting is brilliant.
It's because it's got some, like, maybe the best lineup of actors that's ever been assembled.
You know, when I look at this cast, it really occurs to me that this is maybe the most emblematic movie of the generation of actors we're in. You know, a lot of these movies sort of, they either have, like, actors from a prior generation, or they have like a really wide span of actors. I think that the people in this movie, Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Jason Momoa,
Austin Butler, Florence Pugh,
Pugh.
I like Pugh. I mean, Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, Christopher Walken, and Stellan Skarsgård. Those are like the old guard in it, who are still pretty relevant today.
And everybody's casted appropriately, right? So you've got like, this is like the who's who, and everybody's in the right spot. Christopher Walken is terrific. Everybody's so good. The acting is so good. And the story is the story. The cinematography is beautiful. The way they bring in the elements of the story, even though you know what's going to happen or maybe you don't, it like the tension is there. There's the anticipation is there. It is wonderful. It's wonderful. I'm really excited for Dune Messiah to come out. I'm sure it's been greenlit at this point. And for those of you who don't know, Dune Messiah was written by Herbert as a bit of a reaction to folks sort of considering Paul this hero and being excited about Paul, as you know, in particular in the United States, but also in England and the Western world. So there's some spoilers there, perhaps. Gosh, it's so good, Andrew. It is so, so good. If you haven't seen it, go see it.
I have a huge knowledge gap in my life in that I didn't ever play the Dune games.
Are there games?
Pretty sure.
Oh, I don't know.
I never did the books, and I've not seen the movies.
You've got to read Dune and Dune Messiah. You just have to, Andrew. You would love it.
I'm sure I would. It's just it's a strange, like, little siloed knowledge gap.
Oh, my gosh. And this movie series has shaped up to just be one of the greatest of all time. I mean, sci-fi, you know, genre movies. Really, really, really amazing.
Which are all just space westerns.
Yeah.
All of them.
It's really wonderful, Andrew. Really, really, really good. So I think that's all I'm going to say. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody if you haven't read it and you're just like, I'm doing the movies. I won't spoil anything, but
Dune dies at the end.
It's excellent. It's excellent. And just so you know, Paul's not the hero.
And Dune's not a character.
I do have a plug I want to give.
Do me.
We're long here, but I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I have been on the Pen Addict Slack. The Pen Addict being probably like the most famous or relevant pen blog. There's a Slack, which is this incredibly diverse community. And they talk about everything. There's a Watches subreddit on there that I spent, not subreddit, channel that I spent a lot of time on there. But the Pen Addict is at the time this episode is published, will have just announced pre-orders on their Notice collaboration watch.
Interesting.
This is going to be the second ever Sector Dive GMT watch.
You're welcome for paving the way.
And it's terrific. So,
it's fun.
So there's some details here. Andrew, I sent you some copy, but this is a countdown timer Dive GMT with a really lovely orange dial, and I think what they're calling a poker chip countdown bezel. Aluminum bezel.
Oh, this is fun.
Big, chunky. It's alternating silver and orange on the bezel. This is a really fun watch, in part because it's part of another community that I'm part of or have become part of. It's Notice, which we're huge fans of.
And it's a full hour countdown timer. It's not your typical 15-minute countdown timer.
Yeah, it's all the way around. Yeah. Yep, you get a countdown all the way around.
This is fun.
They made a lot of fun choices here. I think it's really terrific. It's very orange. It's very orange.
Very orange.
I think the color is sort of the Pen Addict's orange. There's a card in the website copy, which I got previewed to me, which is a Robert Oster color collaboration with the Pen Addict Fire on Fire. Yeah, this is really terrific. It's a Sector Dive GMT. So we've talked about that watch a lot.
When?
But pre-orders will be out now. So you should be able to find this on the Notice website. Pretty fun. That's all I have to say about it, but I thought I would bring it up.
Who wrote this?
So this is one of the folks on the Slack, his name is Michael, who wrote this. This is the copy for the pre-order release. Michael leaked this to me in case I wanted to talk about it, and I did.
And I'll be linking it elsewhere.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to leak it. I'm just going
to
wait.
Well, there won't be a link to this in the show notes, I don't believe.
No, I didn't say link. I said leak. Oh,
leak. If we get in there, if we think about it, we'll get in there and add this. But
what's Michael's relationship to the watch world? Besides liking watches. Who worked on the design lab with this?
I think that this was pretty collaborative with the entire watches channel. I think they did a lot of polls and it's kind of crowdsourced. So you'll notice it has so
it's like F71 kind of feel with like notice at the design lab helm.
Very much so.
Oh, yeah, fun.
Very much. It's a bit of a forum watch. So a forum collab. So a lot of these decisions were made before I was really in that community.
Elsewise, it would have been worse.
I've been watching this sort of come together over the last month or so, and they're now ready to announce. So
this is fun. That orange is really, really nice. It's like, I can't tell. Is it sunbursty or is it just the way the light's hitting it in the photos?
I think it is a little, I think it's a little bit like ours where you've got like that shimmer. It's not sunbursty necessarily, but you do have that shimmer in there.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really like that bezel. The poker chip bezel orange and steel is fire.
It's got a great, the 24 hour track is instead of being on the bezels on the inner portion is on the rehout. Which is a fun touch. Yeah, it's a really cool watch. I will say they have less water resistance than we do.
Do they have just 100 meters?
It's just 100.
We've got greater than or equal to 110. 11 points, baby.
Andrew, anything you want to add?
That's a costly point to lose. No, I'm out of things.
Hey, can I just take a moment to thank all of you? All of you at home for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker Podcast. Hey, look, do me a favor. Go to our website, watchclicker.com. That's where we post every episode of this podcast, but also articles and reviews every week and sometimes multiple times per week. If you want to check us out on the social media to follow what we're doing, you can do that on Instagram. Instagram's what we call that place. At watchclicker or at 40and20_watchclicker. Well, that's where we post updates about what we're doing on the website. If you want to support us, and oh boy, we hope you do, you can do that at patreon.com/40and20. That is where we get all of the funds that we need to host the website, to host pictures. Oh my gosh, there's so many pictures. And to post every single episode, host every single episode of this podcast. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.